This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The Children's Hospital of Philadelphia tells parents of children they're admitting as patients to leave their child's dietary supplements at home. The hospital explained their reasoning in an opinion piece in the New York Times, saying the Joint Commission, which is responsible for hospital accreditation in the United States, requires that dietary supplements be treated like drugs. It makes sense, the hospital says, because vitamins, amino acids, herbs, minerals, and other botanicals have pharmacological effects, so they are drugs. But the Philadelphia hospital quickly points out that the Food and Drug Administration doesn't regulate dietary supplements as drugs. They aren't tested for safety and efficacy before they're sold. Many aren't made according to minimal standards of manufacturing. This raises concern not just for children, but for anyone who takes these supplements, and many, many, many of us do. After all, we see them on drugstore shelves, they're advertised on television and in magazines, so we reason they must be safe. Well, now a new study presented late last year underlines earlier concerns and could have significant implications for both consumers and manufacturers of herbal and dietary supplements in the U.S. That study found that those who regularly take herbal dietary supplements are at a higher risk of liver damage and liver failure. Dr. Herbert Minkowski, M.D., is one of the lead researchers for that study and director of the Liver, Digestive, and Metabolic Laboratory at Carolina's Healthcare Systems, Carolina's Medical Center, and he joins us here in our Spirit Square studio for the hour. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Dr. Minkowski is with us here, but joining us by phone in Washington is Daniel Fabricant, Dr. Daniel Fabricant, director of the Division of Dietary Supplement Programs at the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition at the Food and Drug Administration. Thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you, Mike.
You know, for years we heard nothing, little to nothing, about these dietary supplements, about their efficacy, about their safety. But it seems that in recent years, more and more red flags have been popping up. Your study, I think, may be the latest red flag to pop up. But it's not the first study to raise these red flags, has it? The first medically, clinically conducted study, correct?
That's correct. There have been a number of earlier studies indicating, for example, that things that are claimed to be in these supplements aren't always there, or on the other side, that sometimes things that are not said to be present in these supplements actually are present, particularly, for example, prescription drugs, which can be fairly powerful. These things have been found repeatedly when analyses have been done by the Food and Drug Administration and other labs showing that, for example, the active ingredients of Viagra or the active ingredients of certain weight loss prescription drugs, quite powerful, potentially have risks, have in fact been present in what have been sold and marketed as totally natural product.
So how is your study different? How are the findings in your study different?
Well, what we've been doing for the last approximately 10 years, and we're going to continue for at least another 5 years, have been doing a national study. There are about 8 centers that have been involved around the country in which we have been interested to find out causes of liver injury due to drugs. The focus has began primarily on prescription drugs, some over-the-counter drugs as well. But as we have been doing this, we've seen an increasing percent of significant liver injury that's caused not by these prescription drugs, but rather by herbals and dietary supplements, what we usually call HDS for short. And it's been a real concern for us because these have been significant injuries. There have been now 13 of the patients that have been enrolled in this study that have actually died or have required liver transplant due to one or more of these dietary supplements. So with the increase that we've seen in this country in the use of dietary supplements, increased popularity, lots of marketing, as you say, you can find this in virtually every drugstore and nutrition center. We've also seen, what we think is a significant increase in the frequency with which adverse events are occurring. And we're focusing on liver adverse events, but there are others as well.
And does that mean that people are taking more of them, they're overdosing themselves on these things, or that the actual ingredient list has changed, or the mixture of the ingredients has changed over time?
Well, I'm quite sure that both of those are true. For example, one of the big categories of injury that we've found are in the natural products that are being marketed primarily for weight loss. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, women, mainly women, who are interested in losing weight think that, well, if three capsules a day are good, six capsules a day are going to be better. And that's not necessarily the case. We all know that you can overdose on effective medications, and the same is true for these herbals. Now, that being said, we've also seen significant liver injury when people have taken the recommended amounts of these. So it goes both ways.
Let me bring the FDA into this. The FDA estimates that more than 50% of Americans use herbal or dietary supplements, which makes the obvious question even more obvious. Why aren't these supplements regulated like drugs by the FDA? In fact, if you go to the FDA's website, it says this: FDA regulates both finished dietary supplement products and dietary ingredients, but it goes on to say that FDA regulates dietary supplements under a different set of regulations than those covering conventional foods and drug products. Under the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994, the manufacturer of a dietary supplement or dietary ingredient is responsible for ensuring that the product is safe before it is marketed. The manufacturer, FDA, is responsible for taking action against any unsafe dietary supplement product after it reaches the market. That's kind of burying the lead because what we need to know is that you're not checking these things until somebody gets sick or dies. Why? If the governing body of American hospitals believes that dietary supplements work like and therefore are drugs, why doesn't the FDA see it that way, Dr. Traficant?
Well, it's not the FDA that sees it one way or the other. I think the issue is, you know, we get our authorities from Congress. Congress writes the law. Mm-hmm. You know, ours is not to wonder why. Ours is but to do or die, so to speak. You know, these are the authorities we have. We work under those authorities, and where we find problems, where we find harms for consumers, we certainly aren't shy about taking action and doing everything.
So you're not the bad. You're not the bad guy in all of this. You're just following the rules that are prescribed for you, and you can't really act outside those rules. Would you like to have the rules change now that you've seen some evidence that perhaps your involvement at the FDA would be a good thing?
Well, we are involved at the FDA. When we see, you know, clear indication of a problem, you know, we had in 2013, we had an incidence of liver injury that started in the state of Hawaii and was spread to the rest of the country, where we did take action. We removed the product from commerce. So we are in the game. Again, though, our authorities are our authorities. That's not really a question I can answer. We work under those authorities. We work under our resources, and we do all we can, like that incidence in Hawaii, to protect public health.
If the government considers these supplements to be food and not drugs, why aren't they under the control and the actual physical plants where these drugs are manufactured under the jurisdiction of the USDA? Why aren't they inspected by the Department of Agriculture?
Well, we share jurisdiction on foods with the Department of Agriculture. Department of Agriculture regulates mostly meat and poultry. We regulate dietary supplements, finished products. We do inspect dietary supplement facilities to the tune of about 400 facility inspections a year. I believe last year we did just over 420. So we're out there. We're inspecting facilities, but largely our authorities put us in a reactive posture. It is a post-market surveillance type authority that we have for monitoring adverse events, and so we depend on that information to take action and to keep consumers safe.
When you have inspected these plants, what have you found overall?
We found some problems across the board, quite honestly. What happens is our field offices, they do a great job. They go out and inspect facilities, and they classify those inspections one of three ways. Two of which indicate that there's a serious violation, or the second of which is that there's a violation that they're going to give the firm some time to come into compliance. But those indications are 70% of the time the firm is not in compliance with the minimal quality standards they're supposed to meet.
And what happens when they are not found to be in compliance with minimal standards?
We look at all possible regulatory actions. We've enjoined firms, which means we shut them down from operating. We seize products, which means we take their goods and have them destroyed. We've also pursued criminal action for not meeting quality standards. So it ranges from administrative action, they get warning letters, to civil action, to criminal action.
Dr. Bunkowski.
I just wonder, Dr. Fabricant, whether these inspections include actually doing assays of what the components of these agents are.
The expectation is the firm is doing those, and our inspectors are trained to ask the firm and look at the firm's data to see how they are doing those sorts of assays.
But, you know, if you walk into a plant and you find it to be substandard in terms of its sanitation or the way they do things, it's simply not the way things are supposed to be done, why would you have any confidence in what was actually in the drugs that they're putting out or the products they're putting out?
In the supplements, again, you know, that's we do the inspections to the standards that, you know, the GMP standards that are out there, good manufacturing practice standards, which are the minimal quality standards. That's not really a question for us. You know, again, okay. We ensure that the laws are enforced and that people are, in fact, meeting those standards. And if they're not, we look to take action.
Is that a question for anybody in the government in terms of the ingredients before somebody gets themselves into trouble or has an injury or death associated with the use of the product?
Well, I think there's a few things being confused here. The burden on the manufacturer when we do an inspection is to have documentation to show they've tested things. So that is already there. That's already established under the GMP rules, if you will, that the firm is not supposed to release things into commerce that haven't been tested, that they don't know what's in the product. When we encounter that situation, we do take action to make sure that that product gets out of the hands of consumers real quick.
So would you disagree with Dr. Bunkowski when he describes this as the Wild West? And says that when people buy these supplements, it's anybody's guess as to what they're getting. Would you disagree with that?
I think, Mike, it's not that simplistic. I think we see a range of actors out there. It's a growth industry. It's a broad industry. We have approximately 85,000 products out there that we're in charge of. As you know, the agency has many priorities. One out of every $4 in this country is spent on an FDA-regulated good. So as priorities and resources allow, clearly not one out of every $4 that Congress budgets goes to the FDA. So we have and are usually in a position where we do more with less, and I think we're doing all we can to cover the field and those folks that are egregious and do clearly violate the laws and have no interest in putting a product together that takes into account people's health. We're very abrupt and quick about taking action in those situations.
And Dr. Fabricant, what about the producers of these that are not in this country? There's a great deal of these things being made. In fact, probably worldwide, much more of these are being made and consumed, for example, in Asia than in the U.S.
That's not entirely accurate. Many of the raw ingredients do come from Asia. That is correct. But most of the manufacturing, the finished product manufacturing, actually takes place in the U.S. But to that point, we do foreign inspections. We've done inspections in Asia, a variety of countries in Asia. And we also, quite frequently, detain imports, refuse imports if they don't meet particular quality standards. And so these are, this is an ongoing activity of the agency in all categories we regulate.
Dr. Daniel Fabricant is director of the Division of Dietary Supplement Programs at the FDA. We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Atrium Animal Hospital and Wellness Center, providing holistic animal health care for 17 years, offering pet parents a strategy to achieve and maintain furry family vitality. AtriumAnimalHospital.com. And North Carolina Dance Theater, presenting innovative works, a collaborative performance featuring local musicians and four contemporary ballets, now through February 15th. Tickets at ncdance.org. Well, a young man named Yaniv Barcelai graduated from the University of North Carolina in 2011, but already has worked for the State Department, Special Representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan, and for our representative for Somalia. He's written a book about how Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, and the Taliban survived the American response to the 9/11 attacks, at least for a while. And he will take us from White House meetings to our most sensitive operations in Afghanistan tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, U.S. Labor Secretary Thomas Perez, his thoughts on how the Obama administration can bypass a reluctant Congress to reduce income inequality, raise the minimum wage for more workers, and aid the long-term unemployed.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about dietary supplements and their possible link to problems in the body, either injury or death in some cases. There's a recent study that was conducted by a team of physicians here in the Charlotte area at Carolinas Medical Center, a national study with Dr. Herbert Bonkowski, who's one of our guests today, being one of the lead researchers on herbal and dietary supplements. He joins us in our studio. Dr. Daniel Fabricant is director of the Division of Dietary Supplement Programs at the FDA, which historically, I believe, I can say this with some accuracy, has been understaffed and is not the bad guy in this. They are only following the rules that they're allowed to follow, which the problem here, I think, leads it up to you, the consumer. Is that correct, Dr. Bonkowski, to know what you're taking? And I'm sure that's difficult to know.
It is difficult to know. For example, in the study that we did, we found that there were as many as 30 or 40 ingredients in a single product, listed ingredients. And, of course, the possibly unlisted ones may be even greater. Furthermore, we've experienced a number of people who really become almost, one could say, habituated or addicted in some sense to using these products, so that I think our record among people that developed liver injury for the numbers of agents that you were taking was about 35 or 37 different agents. And this woman came in and was sick and jaundiced, and of course trying to figure out which of these caused the injury is virtually impossible. You know, so many, it's a daunting task. However, I can say that there are two main categories of types of injury that we're seeing. One occurs in young men who are bodybuilders, and they are taking a variety of products hoping to increase their muscle mass. And these things are well known in certain forms to cause a severe liver injury that can go on for months, and they can feel quite ill. The other major category has been in women who are taking these agents mainly for weight loss, sometimes for general wellness and things like that.
As I understand it, in your study at least, 100% of the people you studied who are taking, who had damage from bodybuilder or what do you call them? I guess bodybuilding supplements are men, 100% of the survey.
That's correct.
Whereas the fat burners, mostly women, but not all women. I think about 65% were women, 35% were men. In that category, in the fat-burning category, did you see similar damage and injury to the men as to the women, or were there different kinds of damage and injury?
No, they were different. The so-called fat-burning produced what's called a more hepatitic or hepatocellular kind of injury.
Which means what?
That means that there was evidence of severe damage, sometimes leading to death or the need for liver transplant, in the hepatocytes themselves. The hepatocytes are the cells in the liver that are really the main functioning cells of the liver, and they carry out an astonishing array of things. The liver is responsible for maintaining glucose levels at a normal in a normal range, for maintaining normal amino acids, lipids. It's responsible for secreting proteins. It's also responsible for getting rid of toxins. It's the real central organ for protection of our internal milieu. So when the liver is sick, you can get sick very, very quickly, and you can go from feeling well to feeling very ill in a very short period of time. Now, one thing I want to stress for the listeners is that, you know, if you're taking supplements and you develop some feelings of tiredness, fatigue, nausea, loss of appetite, perhaps some upper abdominal pain. These can be warning signals. What I would recommend strongly is that you stop taking the supplement, particularly if it's been only maybe a month, 2 or 3 months that you've been taking it, and see your doctor or your healthcare provider to find out whether the supplement might be the cause of an acute hepatitis.
I want to point out that Dr. Fabricant with the FDA is not just some bureaucrat. You actually know a lot about this. You have your PhD in the study of medicines derived from natural sources. And prior to your taking your current position as director of the Division of Dietary Supplement Programs at the FDA, you were vice president of Global Government and Scientific Affairs for the Natural Products Association. I'm assuming that's the supplements industry. Why did you switch sides?
I don't know if it's so much as switching sides. I think my my prior life was very similar to my my current life, in that, you know, the issue is about the quality standards, meeting the quality standards, and following things to the letter of the law. You know, that's what I advocated for my members to do when I was on that side of things. And this is, I think, it's a different component, because now I, instead of doing it via membership requirements, and do it with the letter of the law. But the thrust is the same, that people meet the laws and meet minimal quality standards.
Were you at all concerned when you were with the Natural Products Association? Are you more concerned today or less concerned today, or about the same in terms of the safety and efficacy of these supplements?
Well, you know, we don't really deal with efficacy, so I think that you have to take off the table. That's not what we do at the agency. Our primary concern is really the safety. And when we see things coming to market that haven't been notified, or we see products and products being made that don't meet minimal quality standards, we are concerned. And you know, I think, but, you know, our concern isn't really our job. Our job is taking action, and I think we've done quite a bit of that.
Have you found or discovered more abuse in the time you've been with the FDA than you were aware of during your time with the industry?
I can't comment on that. I think what I can say is that, you know, we certainly have stepped up our enforcement actions at the agency. We've stepped up what we're doing, and we're certainly looking to, you know, get to problems, you know, that harm consumers in an effective, in a robust manner, and I think we're doing that.
Let's talk some specifics about the dietary supplements that most concern you, Dr. Bonkowski, because I know that you're looking at the bodybuilding and the fat burning supplements, but I'm sure that there are others as well. But which are the ones that you are you most concerned about?
Well, Dr. Fabricant mentioned one called Oxy Elite Pro, which was responsible for a number of serious acute liver injuries, mainly in Hawaii, but also in the U.S. It, as he said, has been withdrawn from the market. Probably the main toxic ingredient of this, although I'd be interested in his comments on this, was agilene, which was found within that and which is known to be potentially hepatotoxic. We've been impressed in our network with the relatively high frequency with which green tea extracts have been found in the products that have been associated with the liver injury from fat-burning ingredients.
And I saw that yesterday, and I thought, green tea extract sounds benign. I mean, it sounds like a good thing to do.
Yes, I mean, we all hear a great deal about the purported health benefits of green tea, and I think that if you're drinking a few cups of green tea a day, it's very unlikely that you will suffer any, at least, liver injury, although there is one pretty well-documented case of a Japanese man who was drinking about 7 or 8 glasses of green tea per day, and who developed serious liver injury, and careful examination led to the conclusion by the physicians that this was actually due to the green tea. Now, the active ingredients of green tea are what are called catechins, and these are polyphenolic compounds that can have both antioxidant but also prooxidant activities. And the danger is that in these extracts, so this is concentrating these catechins into a small capsule, that clearly if you take these in concentrated form and take 5, 6, 7 capsules a day, some people are at risk for developing liver injury. This is well known to be an hepatotoxin. In fact, if you give a sufficient dose of these catechins to a mouse or a rat, you can induce hepatic necrosis. It's very similar to an overdose of acetaminophen, for example.
So in other words, whatever good may come of drinking 1 or 2 or 3 cups of green tea, what you're doing is you're taking the active ingredient in that green tea and putting it in a capsule about 1,000 times or 100 times what it would be in a cup of tea. So if you take it several times a day, you really are overdosing yourself on that.
Yes, potentially.
Some of the other things that you mentioned in your study were anabolic steroids, valerian, mistletoe, pennyroyal, hoodia, if that's how you say it, mahuang, comfrey, and black cohosh. What are these things and why do people take them?
Well, they're taken for a variety of reasons. For example, black cohosh is heavily promoted for the amelioration, the improvement in menopausal symptoms. And these things are well known to be potential hepatotoxins. There have been a number of cases in which black cohosh, both in our network and outside of our network, have been associated with acute hepatitis, liver failure, death, need for liver transplant. The other ones the same way. So now I don't want to give the impression that prescription drugs are always safe either. I mean, almost any compound, especially any compound that is taken up into the body and metabolized by the liver, is a potential hepatotoxin. And so there clearly are also important host factors that influence whether somebody is going to get liver injury. There are probably nutritional factors that are important. So what I would urge your listeners to do is to think carefully about any medication or any herbal dietary supplement before they take it. Do I really need this? What is the benefit going to be? Because one can't predict a priori at this stage in general what one's response to drugs and medications or herbal dietary supplements is going to be.
I want to come back to your comment about prescription drugs and even over-the-counter drugs, pharmaceuticals that are regulated, in fact, by the FDA in a second. But I want to ask you just point blank. Is there any damage aside, is there any evidence that these dietary supplements that people are taking, either for weight loss or for bodybuilding or for other purposes, that they work? Do they work?
Clearly, the bodybuilding supplements that contain these 17 alkylated steroids work in the sense that they increase muscle mass. I mean, they're like taking testosterone, and testosterone has obvious desired effects on muscle mass, especially with physical activity. It also has known adverse effects on the liver. On the heart, there's just been in the news recently the marked increase in risk of heart attack within the first few months after taking testosterone for these so-called low T syndromes. Mm-hmm. So yes, they do work. I think probably the one that is clearest is that Silymarin, a main ingredient of milk thistle, does work for treating acute mushroom poisoning. But for most of these so-called fat burners and things like that, I would say the evidence that they actually increase weight loss is small to nil, and they've not been subjected to carefully done true clinical trials.
And your concern extends to vitamins as well. We heard a report not too long ago. I believe this was the report essentially said, don't take a vitamin. Don't take a multivitamin. You're just wasting your money. No, you don't need it. They don't work. Don't take them. You say that water-soluble vitamins such as B vitamins and vitamin C are safe, even in large doses. But fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, E, and K, can lead to hypercalcemia, kidney and liver damage, brain and eye problems.
Yes, that's correct.
Taken as directed or because you overdosed on them, took too many of them?
Probably because of taking too much.
Does the FDA regulate vitamins?
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I think, again, the issue is, you know, for high-dose vitamin A, that's something the agency has clearly taken action on over the past, you know, especially if women are, you know, expecting to have a child or looking to get pregnant. Obviously, vitamin A is very well known to have challenges there. So our expectation is that people know that. And in agreement with Dr. Monkowski, I mean, I think the critical thing we advise people, if they are going to use a supplement, is talk to their physician. Really talk to their healthcare provider, have a good understanding of why they're taking a supplement, and have that discussion. And the converse, we want doctors to ask questions, not just in a general sense in terms of what supplements are you taking, but are you taking weight loss products? Are you taking workout products? Additionally, if consumers see claims that sound too good to be true, they likely are, and we advise consumers to stay away from those products.
Go ahead.
And lastly, I think that the key thing is if people have suffered any sort of injury they think is associated with a dietary supplement, there's a requirement that manufacturers submit that so they can contact the manufacturer, but they can also contact FDA via MedWatch and report that problem.
Have herbal and dietary supplements always been unregulated by the FDA, or is that a relatively new thing?
And again, I don't think it's regulated different, Mike. I think people get confused because they see a capsule, a tablet, and they think, okay, this is like the medications that I get a prescription from my doctor for. That's not the case with dietary supplements. Our authorities are different. We do have authorities. When there are problems, we do take action. So it's not regulated the same as drugs. It's not regulated prior to going to market for safety or efficacy. We're largely in a post-market reactive type posture. But when we find a problem, we do take action.
The Hatch Act is what governs your jurisdiction here, and it allows companies to make general health claims about their products without undergoing federal review for safety or effectiveness. Why? Who thought that would be a good idea?
Again, I think you're talking about the SHEA, the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act. The Hatch Act is a generic drug act, but that's a different story. So I think you're talking about that. It affords what are called structure function statements. And structure function statements are, as you said, Mike, those general well-being statements. Something can support, you know, a healthy gastrointestinal function is a common one. Things of that nature can't claim to cure, treat, or mitigate a disease. That's a violation of federal law, and we take action as such. You know, those are our authorities as ascribed by Congress, and we make sure that people are following the rules of the road.
The FDA does force food manufacturers to alter their claims from time to time. Does that only happen because of an incident, or can the FDA do that at will?
We do that when we see a problem. Same thing with dietary supplements. When we see someone stepping over a regulatory law that's in place in dietary supplements, what we see frequently are products making disease claims that a product treats a given disease, cures a given disease. That's a problem because if someone needs real medical care, they may delay treatment. So that's a huge problem, and we take action quite often on that sort of thing. Again, a full range of action from sending warning letters to civil cases to criminal cases. So
we have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and dermatology, laser, and vein specialists of the Carolinas, providing minimally invasive treatments for the discomfort of varicose and spider veins. Appointments available at the Charlotte or Monroe locations. Details at carolinaskin.com. And Community School of the Arts, teaching more than 15 weeks of creative music and art summer camps across Charlotte. Enrollment is now open online. Details at csarts.org. The Secretary of Labor will be on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes to talk about the president's agenda to reduce income inequality, increase the minimum wage, some of the things he talked about in the State of the Union, and recruit big business to hire long-term unemployed folks. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to jump into our conversation, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is the place to start, and we're coming right back.
Conversations like the one in this YouTube video might occur in most any neighborhood.
He's got too many dogs.
Well, she's got antennas on her roof.
Yeah, and oh, wait a minute. I know you guys are fighting over homeowners association rules, huh?
Join WFAE for a public conversation on homeowner associations and what residents do and don't like about HOAs. Thursday evening at Davidson Day School. Details and registration at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, lead researcher on herbal and dietary supplements, a study that concluded that many of them cause liver damage and can cause liver failure, is with us Dr. Herbert von Koski, MD. He was the director of the Liver Digestive and Metabolic Disorders Lab at Carolina's Medical Center. Dr. Daniel Fabricant is director of the Division of Dietary Supplement Programs at the FDA. Here's where I guess a lot of people get confused, and you cannot blame them for assuming that many of these things are not bad for you, that they're good for you, because I'm wrong. In a lot of cultures, they have been taking these things, these ingredients, forever, for centuries, to no obvious detrimental effect. And suddenly, you're telling them, well, in pill form, no. Is there something different between, say, valerian or mistletoe in pill form versus how it was used in a native culture someplace?
Well, I think that oftentimes it is more concentrated. And, a lot of the advertising of these is along those lines. But also the fact that these potential hepatotoxins have been used for centuries by shaman and various healers in traditional societies doesn't necessarily mean that they actually have been safe in those societies as well. In fact, if one looks at liver injury in cultures where these so-called traditional medicines have been more used, China, yeah. Korea, one finds that about 50% of the acute liver injury in those countries is ascribed to these so-called traditional Chinese medicines. So even today, they're not necessarily safe in everybody. But, I mean, we are talking about relatively rare occurrences. And so it is true that for most people, most of the time, who are using these supplements, they probably aren't going to have liver injury. We're just trying to sound an alarm and to alert people to the fact that, like drugs, these things, even though they're natural products, aren't necessarily safe all the time doses.
You use the word natural, and a lot of people say, well, it's natural. How can it be bad?
Well, ricin is natural, and it's among the most toxic things known to man. Botulism toxin is a natural product. So
there's also going to be a segment of the population who says, you know, Western medical doctors know how to do one thing and one thing only. Prescribe a drug for whatever it is that ails me. I go to the doctor, they give me something to take. They give me a pill to take. And that's just supporting big pharma. Why can't I take this upon myself and go to experts at health food stores and buy dietary supplements to treat what my symptoms are and see if it works?
I mean, I agree that in our society, we have become too reliant on, as you say, I've got a symptom, there must be a pill for that. We in the medical profession are sometimes too ready to prescribe drugs. I wouldn't say that all doctors are that way, but it is true that you're in a very busy practice and you don't have a lot of time to talk with patients, to counsel them. In some ways, it's faster and easier for you to prescribe a drug than it is to do the kind of counseling of patients that might, in the long run, be better for the patient and in their better interests.
I guess the irony here is that the people who are most affected by taking these dietary supplements that sometimes harm them are people who are really genuinely trying to do good things for themselves, to take care of themselves, to lose weight, to build muscle mass, to be healthy. And they're probably the same people who read ingredients on packages. But can you read the ingredients on these dietary supplements and really understand or know what it is you're getting?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question, honestly. What I can tell you is that when detailed analyses have been done, as I said earlier in the hour, it has turned out both ways. There have sometimes been things in there that weren't on the label. On the other hand, sometimes things that were claimed to be on the label weren't present or were present in homeopathic concentrations.
So, meaning very low?
Very low. So you can't really absolutely depend on what's on the label to be sure that you're getting things that are claimed.
Michael in Mooresville writes, my wife and I want to be parents. We've been waiting almost 3 years. We are taking the herbal supplement route to boost fertility. Could our taking above the daily dosage cause liver problems and render our efforts ineffective?
Well, I think that they could. Obviously, I don't know the details of what is being taken. But I would, in general, not recommend that people take more than the recommended doses, because dose does make a difference. I mean, we talked about green tea earlier, and a bit of green tea is not going to do any harm. There might be some benefits, but clearly high concentrations, large amounts of these catechins in these green tea extracts can be toxic.
Do we really need to be taking any dietary supplements? The study that just came out that says don't take multivitamins because they don't do anything for you. Do we really need to be taking anything? What are we missing in our diet, when we sit down to eat, that needs to be supplemented by a pill?
If we have reasonable, good dietary habits, nothing. We don't need vitamins. We don't need dietary supplements. The one possible exception to that would be vitamin D. We don't generally get enough sun exposure. Few of us as adults probably use as much milk, which has some vitamin D supplementation in it.
And calcium.
And calcium. So perhaps if the 25-hydroxyvitamin D level is measured and is low, taking a modest dose of vitamin D may be sensible. Taking some folate if you're a pregnant woman, 400 micrograms a day, that has been shown to decrease the risk of congenital defects of the nervous system. So there are a few instances, special instances, in which it does make sense. But for most of us, if we're on a normal diet, we don't need any vitamins. We don't need any supplements. We are we have the richest urine in the world here in the U.S. because we're peeing out all this vitamin B that we're taking every day.
What about those people who are taking these fat burners because they want to lose weight, or the people who want to gain muscle mass? Is there a way to do that without taking the supplements through regulating your diet and exercise?
Yes.
Period. That's it. Yes.
Very, very simple question, very simple answer. But, you know, the only way to get rid of excess weight is to burn off more calories than you take in. It's very simple. It's very straightforward.
A press release, Dr. Fabricant, that came from Carolina's healthcare system about Dr. Bonkowski's study says the consumption of herbal and dietary supplements may lead to liver disease, liver failure, and in some cases, death. Findings from the study confirm that bodybuilding, fat burning, and other supplements currently available in the U.S., while unregulated by the Food and Drug Administration, present serious and often irreversible health threats. I'm sure you heard about this study before we asked you to be on this program. What was your reaction and others in the FDA when that statement was released?
Well, I think we get concerned anytime people say that things are unregulated, because that's not the case. And I think where we have seen incidences of liver failures, again, not associated but actually caused by dietary supplements, we've been very quick in taking action and getting the product off the shelves out of the hands of consumers. So I think that that's really you know, at least as far as we're concerned, that's the critical thing that I think needs to be restated. But again, I think with that said, I think people should know that if they do have a problem even associated with a dietary supplement, the agency does want to know about those issues. Again, that's really the best source of information for us to take action if there is a problem with a product out there.
Let me ask you this. If a group of scientists such as Dr. Bonkowski come up with a study that indicates liver damage, sometimes irreversible and even death associated with some of these products, can you then take action? Do you then take action?
It depends on the quality of the data. I think that's always the critical factor. We deal with post-market surveillance, and in a lot of ways, the agency is the gold standard worldwide for post-market surveillance. And I can tell you by and large, and I think one of the critical things that, you know, we want to get out there is that, you know, the information we get isn't always complete. So the more information people can send in to the agency on these sorts of cases, that certainly helps for us to do our job.
Have you seen this study yet?
Yes, I have.
And how would you characterize it? Is it complete?
Well, again, I think a lot of the challenges with post-market surveillance, and it's not any indictment on anyone conducting this study. I think in general, a lot of factors tend to be lacking. Medical histories aren't always available. Other factors about the incidents, you challenge and then re-challenge the body with a certain agent to see if that was in fact the culprit. Those things are frequently absent from anything dealing with post-market surveillance. So, again, we don't take it lightly. Our burdens legally are to show causality. Association isn't enough. Just having the product on your person and then suffering an injury doesn't mean that the product caused it. So I think that, you know, we take our burdens very, very serious, very carefully, and really try to, have the science drive our decision making.
How would you characterize your study in terms of its completeness and in terms of doing the case histories that Dr. Fabricant has talked about?
In general, I certainly agree with Dr. Fabricant that just because liver injury or some other injury or disease has occurred in someone who's been taking a supplement, one can't assume that the supplement was the cause. In the case of the Drug-Induced Liver Injury Network, we have taken considerable pains to get complete histories and to rule out other causes. And there's a formal process, what we call a causality adjudication process, that we go through in every one of these cases. And for the ones that were the subject of our recent presentation at the National Maine Liver Meeting back in November, we only reported on those cases that, after very careful vetting and assessment, were adjudged by this adjudication process as being definitely, highly likely, or probably to have been caused by the dietary supplements and not by another cause. So, for example, we excluded viral hepatitis. We excluded other common causes of liver injury. We excluded biliary obstruction, gallstones, all these other things that one, as a hepatologist, has to consider when one sees a patient with some kind of acute liver injury.
You are a liver expert. That's your area of expertise. This study concentrates on liver damage. Are there other studies going on that are concentrating on damage potentially caused by dietary supplements that may cause other problems within the body?
I guess that I'm not aware of them, but maybe Dr. Fabricant is. I'm not sure.
Doctor?
There may be, and I think with post-market surveillance, our responsibility, our charge at the agency is to look at all, all medical events, all sentinel medical events, whether they be cardiovascular, related to the liver, whatever they are. That's why there's adverse event reporting requirements, and that's why we really want to urge physicians, people who take dietary supplements, that if they do have an event that they believe is associated with a particular supplement, to let us know. Because as far as I'm aware, the biggest source of data is that at FDA, and I think that the more we can look for answers within that data set, the better we can serve the public health.
I doubt if herbal supplements, dietary supplements, are in the physician's desk reference, if a physician still uses that, and I'm sure that they don't get regularly educated, in quotation marks, by drug reps who are pushing dietary supplements to doctors to prescribe. So do doctors know what's in these things? If I come to a doctor and say, I'm taking this, should I be? Will they be able to say, from an educated point of view, yes or no?
Well, that's why part of the reporting requirement is for people to send the labels of the products into us. We want those product labels. Our burdens, our authorities are really tied to the labeling of the products. Before, you mentioned using too much of a product. Well, if someone's going to abuse a product and take a whole bottle, is it really the product causing the problem or the particular use?
But
we've got it.
I'm sorry, but
be specific. Sorry, go ahead.
This phone connection, there's a little lag on it here. But do physicians sitting in the office know about these dietary supplements enough to be able to say, yes, take this, no, don't take that, or you need to be careful because this might interact with the drug that I have prescribed for such and such?
Well,
I think
probably most doctors are not as well educated and knowledgeable as would be best with respect to those points that you just raised. So I think it's variable.
We have to talk about something you brought up a few minutes ago about prescription and over-the-counter pharmaceuticals that are regulated by the FDA and their problems with the liver. If we're going to talk about dietary supplements, and Beth emails, please have your guests address the liver problems associated with acetaminophen, which is found in Tylenol and other products. It may be responsible for at least as many, if not more, liver problems than herbs and supplements, even in regular doses. People should know how potentially hazardous this common painkiller is, especially if taken in minimally high doses, and it should not be taken with alcohol. And this is half of all, I'm told that half of all liver failure is caused by acetaminophen. So given that, why is it on the market?
Well, I think the difference here is, people get confused. The product looks like a capsule on a dietary supplement side. It hasn't been signed off on by the agency for safety or efficacy prior to going to market. On the drug side, it has. Acetaminophen has a specific drug use, and so it's a different. The products have been evaluated in different ways.
And with that, I have to stop because we're out of time. Dr. Daniel Fabrikant with the FDA, Dr. Herbert Bonkowski with Carolina's Medical Center, and a lead researcher on this herbal and dietary supplement study.